So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
LouisvillePolitics.com, where you can go to check out all the latest for all the stories we're doing and everything else. And while you're there, don't forget to join our email newsletter, get our RSS feed, and click on a sponsor or two. They help pay for everything, you know. We have got a lot going on this week, and I tell you, there's so many things to get into. It's unbelievable. It really is. But the first thing I've always got to get into at the beginning of the week is getting to my partner and co-host, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
Yeah, doing all right. You know, I have to be honest, even after all these years, I cringe a little when I hear you say, "We've got a lot to get into."
Well, you know, you're not the only one. There's a lot of people, I tell you.
It's a bad joke we say where we always wonder, can we actually fill up a show with content, you know, just being two part-timers, kind of like how we are. And it's like, we always have that joke. Well, the government and the politicians and the mainstream media keeps screwing stuff up enough that we'll never run out of stories. And, you know, unfortunately, we never do, so.
Well, what's really fascinating. Yeah, what's really fascinating to me is, I mean, seriously, this is how bad it is, that if everything stopped today, if everybody today, from this day forward, did everything right, we would still have enough content to delve into all the crap that these guys have done to run a continuous show 24 hours a day for 2 or 3 years. And that's just what we've exposed over the last year or 2 years under Barack Obama. I mean, it is totally incredible to me how pathetic it is. I mean, everything from Trayvon Martin being a poster child for a great kid, which is a joke, you know, to Greg Fisher, Mayor Greg Fisher, who has now been named and a whistleblower complaint, and is under a Senate investigation as we speak right here in Louisville. So, you know, we've got all kinds of things that come up, you know, for the racism thing. Then you got the Department of Justice. There's nothing more racist in America today than Eric Holder and his Department of Justice. Man, I don't know. I mean, there's so many things to go. You've got bankruptcies out the wazoo throughout the U.S., including, you know, Birmingham, Alabama, Jefferson County, everything in California. You've got Detroit, who is set to go on now, but now we find out judges answer to Barack Obama, and we'll get into that in a second. You've got Chicago right behind him. Kentucky's rated the number one worst pension fund in the U.S. I mean, where's it going to end, Ed? I mean, how do we run out of content, even if they stopped and did everything right today? How do we run out of content? That's the sad part.
Well, we don't run out of content, but we make them a deal. If they actually stop it and fix everything today, we'll just let all that other content go, you know, pass into the rearview mirror, and we'll all stand around and sing Kumbaya.
I'll look forward to that day. That day will happen when I leave this earth and I show up in heaven, because that's about the only Kumbaya moment there's going to be. You know, and I know folks, believe me, that is awful cocky thinking I'm going to end up in heaven. But, you know, what the heck?
Yeah,
you got to believe something,
say,
right?
That's kind of presumptuous, but okay.
Well, you got to believe in something, man. I tell you what. In the meantime, let's just get right to it, because I tell you, there are a couple of local things that I want to get into before we really go too far into the national stuff. First of all, you know, LouisvillePolitics.com has put out two stories, since, you know, Thursday and Friday, and we put out one of them over the weekend, dealing with the whole racism scam, you know, the mainstream media, the stuff that these guys are doing. I mean, and then the second story has to do with Mayor Fisher and Kevin Cosby and black leadership lying to the citizens of the West End to keep them down. And, you know, I really want to get into the racism first, Ed. Just knock this out of the way real quick, because, you know, we spent a lot of time on it last week. I don't want to spend a whole show on it tonight. But the bottom line is, can there be any doubt that mainstream media is trying to perpetuate a mythical racism argument because it helps them sell ads? Is there any doubt about that?
I think you probably saw the postings that I put up. I've been saying this since before I actually read it from any major pundits. You know me. I'm always going to. The mainstream media is lazy. If it bleeds, it leads. But if they can get an emotional connection, and, you know, facts are optional, if they can get an emotional connection on something, and then they can step in and basically sabotage the process so that it all has to be redone again, or comes to a conclusion that itself is a story. Zimmerman case is the perfect example. Then they're going to do it because it's easy. I mean, it is easy, and that's, you know, like you say, they turn on the cameras. You've got no shortage of people who are trying to be relevant. There's no shortage of people who are trying to offer their opinion on the case, which, you know, I'll shy away from myself. I'll critique the media, but the case is what the case is, and it played out. But, yeah, I mean, no doubt in my mind at all. I mean, it's from professional activists to the corporate mainstream media. If the story has legs, they're happy. If it doesn't have legs and they want it to have legs, then, you know, for advertising dollars, and an easy story where they can run with stock footage and a ready supply of people ready to pop off in front of the camera, yeah, they're all over it.
And, you know, and that's the sad reality of it, because, you know, I mean, here's history, folks, or here's reality. You know, there was over 11,000 black people killed from the time Trayvon Martin was killed until July the 15th. Over 11,000 black people killed. 93% plus of that was black-on-black crime. You know, when you look at the statistics from the FBI, the FBI.gov website, you can get statistics for anything you want. The last full year they had on the murder and things like that was 2011. You know, now white-on-white crime runs about 84%. Black-on-black crime runs about 93%. So we know that the majority of all crime is not a racial divide. It's white-on-white and black-on-black. But it's interesting, in 2011 there were 449 murders of white people by black murderers. In the same time frame in 2011, there were 190 black murders by white people. So blacks are murdering whites at 2.5 to 1, if you want to kind of go off of that logic. You know, but what's really interesting about the Trayvon case is the media refused to let everybody know that Zimmerman had lost Trayvon Martin for at least 4 minutes. Everybody wants to say he was stalking Trayvon and all of this stuff. Zimmerman hadn't seen Trayvon for 4 minutes until he turned around to go back to his car, and Trayvon confronted him. They're also trying to have everybody believe that Trayvon was carrying around a can of Arizona iced tea, which is a lie. He was carrying around a can of Arizona watermelon drink and Skittles, because when you put combine those two ingredients with Robitussin, which has an ingredient DMX in it, it's called going lean. It's basically liquid choline. So here Trayvon Martin, according to the autopsy report and his liver and stuff, had been leaning for quite some time. His liver was already showing damage of it at such a young age. So, you know, there's so many things that they didn't want to get into. And at the same time, you know, some of the other things that were going on during the same time period in 2012, in May of 2012, you had a 76-year-old white man by the name of John Henry Spooner who shot a 13-year-old black child that lived next door because he thought that he had broken in and stolen some shotguns. That was a crime. That was tragedy. That was an older white man shooting a young teen black child. That should have been national news. Mainstream couldn't do that because they had already tried to convince the world that we had a Hispanic named George Zimmerman who was now white. And then, of course, we had the story that we reported and covered quite well of Daniel Atkins. Daniel Atkins was a 29-year-old mentally disabled white man who was shot by a 22-year-old black man at a Taco Bell drive-thru. The black man was told to pull up and wait for his order by a Taco Bell employee. When he pulled up, he almost hit Daniel Atkins, who was trying to cross in front. You know, Daniel Atkins, mentally disabled, you know, turned around and yelled something at the driver and waved his arm. His arm had a dog leash in his hand with his yellow lab on the other end of it. Jude tried to lie, say that, you know, he had a pipe and all this other crap that he tried to hit him with, which was a lie. Then, of course, Jude actually admitted, to the police that he never once thought his life was in danger. So now he's up for trial. That trial goes on in August. You know, and we're not even talking about, you know, one of the most recent horrific crimes where two black teenagers shot a 2-year-old baby in the face and killed him, shot his mom who happened to live. But the mainstream media couldn't put that out there because you're going to be racist if you do. That's the kind of crap we're giving here. It all comes down to this thing called white guilt, and white guilt is destroying America. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And this is kind of the things that we're trying to find out with Trayvon. But you can't convince the poor black people that Trayvon was anything more than an innocent, sweet little child, a 17-year-old child, you know, that wouldn't do anything. Yet we've got reports of all kinds of kids. We've got 13- and 14-year-olds that just ganged up and beat up a white guy. So, you know, black guy. So you know, we've got all of these stories out there. So this is intentional by mainstream. I don't think there's any other way to put it. Do you?
Well, I think, like I say, I think they're lazy. They're going to stick with the Trayvon case because it's easy, lots of stock footage. You know, their cell phones are full of ready-made interviews. And I think to some degree, you haven't seen a lot of reporting on a lot of these cases, especially ones where, you know, the perpetrators are eventually saying, you know, this is for Trayvon or something like that. Because I think the media, in spite of the fact that they're lazy and in spite of the fact that they're working one story for ratings and, you know, cost cutting. I mean, look at it that way. It's cost cutting. It's like if you stick with the Trayvon, you're running off of stock footage. If you go somewhere else, you're going to have to incur some investigative costs and stuff. But I think one of the reasons you might not see it is because somewhere underneath all that commercialism, there's a little bit of guilt. They know that they are partly responsible for ginning this thing up. And when they play it out to be such a clear cut, you know, white on black, full-grown man versus kid, you know, 13-year-old kid that the media keeps putting up on there, 12, 13-year-old kid. And with all that they've done to gin it up, I think they realize at least to some degree that they're responsible for this, and they don't want that out in front. They don't want the public looking at it going, questioning it. Oh my God, why are people so off the chain on this thing? Why are people behaving so irrationally? Why are they behaving so emotionally? You know, and the media would have to answer for that. At some point, they'd have to do some critical self-examination and say, well, maybe we got them a little too worked up, And I just think, I think it may have a little to do with it, but to me, it's just mostly they're running off of stock footage. They're running off of a list of ready-made interviews and interviews that are already in the can.
Right.
This thing is it's like a low-budget movie that's just going to keep on cranking out sequels.
Well, and that's exactly it. And one of the most common arguments I've been getting phone calls, hate mail, and everything else on since this article went up on Friday, is the fact that, a white man kills a black man and gets away with it. Well, I'm sorry to tell you this, folks of color, okay, but Mr. Spooner, the 74-year-old white guy who killed a 13-year-old black child, was just found guilty. He was found guilty. This was before. We got everything out on George Zimmerman. He was found guilty of first-degree homicide on July the 17th, just a week ago. So, it does work right. The system does work right most of the time. Not all of the time. There's always something that slips through the cracks. But there was no doubt that this came in line. But, when we get into the whole racism argument, though, Ed, and this is where I'm leading with this, because we put out a story late last night. It went out first thing this morning all over everywhere. It's called Mayor Fisher's West Side Story, Lies and Broken Promises. And right here in Louisville, at LouisvillePolitics.com, you can see the story. But right here in Louisville, we have got our own race trouble. But our race trouble is done by the white libtard politicians and the black people who benefit. We've got a good story here. This is the first story in a series that's going to go out. It's going to involve Reverend Kevin Cosby of St. Stephen's Baptist Church, Mayor Greg Fisher, and a whole host of others. But essentially, we had a property and a thing. Governor Steve Beshear has been talking for a long time about putting three regional training facilities throughout Kentucky. One of the reasons for that is there was a study done that involved all the major employers in Kentucky, Ford, UPS, GE, you name a major employer in Kentucky, they were involved in this study. And they were asked what the number one problem with growth and development was in Kentucky. And by and large, the number one problem that they all agreed was that we have a lack of an available trained workforce. Now, when you think about that, it makes sense, because all we've got anymore in Louisville anyway is a bunch of fly-by-night warehouses that go out and get temporary workers and destroy the middle class, period. These low-paying...
That's not all we have, Ed. We have all sorts of part-time restaurant jobs, too. And part,
you're right.
And part-time retail jobs that... people from West and South Louisville have to ride on the bus to go out to where those jobs are.
And I think you're absolutely 100% correct, and I agree with you. But for the purposes of this argument, I kind of want to stay with the full-time job, because that's what's supposed to provide for your family, right? So, with all of this in mind.
Let's call it full-time labor.
There you go.
On this show, you and I both respect the hell out of labor, because we've both been there, are there, and been there, done that, got the scars to show for it. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right about the scars. But see, that's interesting though. But Governor Steve Beshear. Now, I am always critical of Democrats. I always am. But Governor Steve Beshear even understood that argument, and he announced that he wanted to go ahead and put three regional training facilities throughout Kentucky. Toyota definitely was looking for one. They're already seeking one. They're still seeking it for Georgetown. All right, they're probably going to get one because it's Toyota in Georgetown. It's a major employer. So why not Louisville? Louisville is home to three of the state's largest employers, Ford, GE, and UPS. And this is where it gets interesting. In June of 2012, there was a group of people put together by Mayor Greg Fisher to develop a plan for a regional training facility in Louisville. It included union officials and representatives, the manufacturers and employers, community leaders, JCTC, U of L, and Simmons College President Kevin Cosby. They were supposed to put together this plan. They had all of these pieces in place, Ford, GE, UPS, UAW, IUE. I can list everything, okay? They had all months and months of meetings, you know, and the plan was to put this worker training property at 8th and Kentucky between JCTC and Simmons College, which is already there on opposite corners, to fill in the middle with all of that, because JCTC and Simmons College are going to be the ones running this. And this is where things really get ugly. Because, you know, the West End had been lied to for so many years, and it's all Democratic leadership who's been doing the lies. A Democrat runs for mayor or metro council. They lie to the West End people. The black people get them elected, and then they just forget about them. That's the reality here in Louisville. Even though a lot of the black people down there don't want to admit that, that's the truth. But you finally had common sense. You had black and white, management and labor, state and local, Republican and Democrat. You name it, they're all working together to finally do something that was right. On top of that, the YMCA, and everybody knows they're building a new facility down in West Louisville, the YMCA is, okay, they had a $1.2 million in community development fund grant, okay? The YMCA decided they did not want to use federal grant money for this project. So at that point, Greg Fisher had a decision to make. Do we go to the feds and redirect $1.2 million to be used on this worker training initiative? As long as it's in the West End, it qualifies for that federal money, okay, in addition to millions more, to my understanding, up to $15 million more, okay? So you got all of these things in place. You had a local real estate place put together the land deal for free. They volunteered their time to do this. You've got JCTC and Simmons College. And for those of you who don't know who Simmons College is, Simmons College is a historically black private co-ed college. It was founded in 1879 as an industrial worker education and training center during the early 1900s, is where it really came to prominence at. Okay? So you've got a West End location working to put together a trained workforce so that our area employers could grow and expand and create jobs. Ford, GE, UPS, you name it. Simmons College, you've got a black college being involved in this. The property is going to go to the West End. You're finally showing the West End black community that they're relevant, because you're allowing them a seat and a voice at the table on a major economic decision. Everything was perfect. Fisher had to make a decision. As soon as D-Day arrived and he had to make a decision, he nixed the whole thing, said he didn't want it. Why didn't he want it? Because of politics and money, folks. That's the problem. Greg Fisher's sister, Lynn Fisher, is the JCTC board chairman. Imagine that conflict of interest. Why is she involved in anything? Oh, yeah, she's also the CEO of Catalyst Learning. What is Catalyst Learning? It's a worker training firm. Lynn Fisher did not want this project next to Simmons College. So Fisher, Greg Fisher, pulled the plug on behalf of his sister to move this project to the East End. Now, this is what's so startling about this. You would think that Kevin Cosby, the president of the all-black co-ed college, Simmons College, would stand up and scream and call foul. He would say, no, this isn't right. You're screwing my people again. He didn't. Kevin Cosby met privately with Greg Fisher. From what I'm told, money exchanged hands, and I'll get into that amount and who exchanged it in coming up very soon, and you're going to be surprised by a few names. One of those initials happens to be DH, and I know they're listening to this program. You're going to be exposed, sir. You're going to be exposed. But he sold out the black community. Now, we continue coming back to racism, Ed. We continue coming back to racism. Here we've got a great example. Lynn Fisher didn't want this thing anywhere around Simmons College, no more than Greg Fisher did, because there wasn't going to be any. They didn't want to be around black people. Let's call it what it is. The failed Democratic leadership in Louisville flat out does not want to be around black people. They want them to go to the polls. They want them to give them their vote, but they don't want to be around black people. That's the truth of it. You think I'm lying, go to LouisvillePolitics.com or go to EdSpringston.com, punch in the search engine, poorer, blacker, and older, and you're going to see what Jerry Abramson had to say about downtown Louisville and the West End when he was in West Virginia thinking that nobody was taping him. This is what we've got going on. So this is what helps that racial divide, Ed, because you got Kevin Cosby down there playing a double standard, getting paid from Greg Fisher. I've got pictures of Kevin Cosby, Simmons College students, at Greg Fisher's house. I know that they're buddy-buddy. Jim King sits on the Simmons College Board of Directors. I know who's screwing who, metaphorically and physically. I know where the money's at, and I can prove everything I've just told you. Why is it that the poorest black communities, like here in Louisville and the West End, continue falling for the racist slant when it's their own black leadership to sell them out because they're making money? Any idea?
Well, no. I mean, I'll have to read up on it and wait and see what your stories say. But, you know, it doesn't surprise me because politics, and I hate to say it, but in both parties, they don't care for the little guy. You know, they like central planning. They like to have all the money going into one place. They like to control everything. And I think one of the reasons you look at is, God forbid, should they have a technical training center that teaches people how to use CNC machines or CAD machines or forklifts or maintain, you know, machinery, anything like that, electronics, like being electric, anything. Because once they do that, then somebody has a marketable skill, then they're not your quote-unquote client. You know, you don't own them anymore. My God, they own themselves, you know. And I want to see as many people own, you know, control their own destiny and own their own destiny as possible. But, you know, if they're going to put up a training center, well, then you've got the same old crap that I mentioned at the beginning of it. If you got anybody from the West End, you know, oh, you qualify for this. All you have to do is get on a bus, ride it for an hour and a half, take your classes. Don't worry, we'll punch in a route for you. You know, they'll have a bus running late. And then when you get out of your technical training, then you got to ride a bus all the way home. You know, God forbid, should they put it in somebody's neighborhood?
Well, that's exactly it. You know, we've got.
It blows me away. East End, it's like great. Then it's just like all the other, buses that run up and down Shelbyville and places like that. Shelbyville Road, it's like great, you know. But now you're basically blowing the nuclear family to bits so that somebody can, you know, so you can control the whole thing. Because mom or dad or your big brother or something or big sister is going to have to travel and they're not going to get home until 11 o'clock at night kind of deal. You know, then it damages the family. But, hey.
Yeah, sort of like busing our school children, right?
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Let's go to the phones real quick. Caller, I have no idea what your number is thanks to the new setup.
Good evening, you son of a bitch. What the fuck's going on?
Well, we're going to cut that one off. I'm not listening to that. So anyway, you know, so we get into all of these things. But see, that's the whole thing, though, because you can't have a community. You can't have a community if you're not recognizing every individual in the community. And that's the problem I've got with the black community here in Louisville, especially in the West End, because the West End has been left to rot. They have been left to rot. You know, they have not been given any support from leadership in this town whatsoever. You've got a preacher on every corner who's telling the whole world about white guilt and how the white man is destroying the black man, which is a lie. I mean, if you look at your black leaders today, I mean, let's look at this. Charles Barkley. Would anybody think that Charles Barkley would be a leader? You know, and look at what he had to say just simply about the Zimmerman trial. Go on to Bill Cosby and what he's been out there saying. You know, go on to a whole host of others. Look at Larry Elder. Larry Elder is a nationally syndicated show. Larry Elder is an African-American radio show host. And Larry Elder says it's garbage. You know, but we have these kind of deals on local levels like Greg Fisher is doing. You know, and he's sitting out here, you know, taking a great opportunity away, giving back federal funds, supposedly. We'll tell you where the $1.2 million really went coming up next week in our next article on this. You know. But he's giving away federal funds that only qualifies, you know, if you go to minority areas and things like that and try to build a neighborhood. And the West End needs infrastructure. The West End needs somebody standing up for them. And unfortunately, their own leaders, the African-American community leaders, aren't standing up. And neither is the Democratic libtards. You know, we've got a lot to get into there. You know, but I tell you what we really need to do right now, though. We need to go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I want to get into Detroit because I think Detroit is a great example. Everything that's going on with Detroit right now is a great example of liberalism being a failure. So stick around, folks. We'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities.
I have no white guilt. I don't feel bad. I don't feel bad for anybody that doesn't do one damn thing to help themselves or continue to be led like sheep to slaughter. And that's what the daggone African-American leadership is doing in these poor African-American communities, including the West End right here at home. They continue electing the liberal libtards, is what we call them, you know, to run things, and they're not doing their job. You know, real quick, one national story before we get into the Detroit situation, Ed. Because I find myself laughing about this. Apparently, well, let me give you these figures first for Louisville. WFPL.org, I've got to give them a plug for this because they did a good job putting this out. They actually followed some studies about how much it actually cost for a family of four in Louisville just to get by. That's not counting anything big here, folks. If you're in Louisville and you're a family of two adults or two kids, your annual income needs to be about $61,171 just to get by. To give you some idea of what that means, is everybody in Louisville has to have a Ford job. It's that simple. Just to get by if you have two kids. And, you know, that's not counting everything. It's just atrocious. But, you know, we've got to look at those things in place. And we've got to understand that the majority of Louisvillians don't make anywhere near $61,000 a year. In Louisville, if you're making $35,000 or $36,000 a year, you're doing pretty good. You're not being able to do anything. You don't have a great lifestyle. You know, you're struggling to make ends meet, robbing Peter to pay Paul, but at least you're not starving. You know, so I thought that was a pretty interesting stat, Ed. I really did.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to read up on it because, you know, it's, when you say getting by, it's always subjective. I mean, what are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know, like we were talking about this LDS property and stuff? Are we talking about $800 a month apartments, or are we talking about a house with a down payment that you can, you know, your house payments would be $400? Are we talking about public schools, private schools? Are we talking about, you know, are we talking about a new car? Or are we talking, yeah, so I'm going to have to read it because there's a lot of variables. I tend to agree because my wife's a nurse and nurses don't make $60,000, but I, you know, we've got some friends of her, you know, and they do all right. They get by, you know, they're not mansions, but they do all right. And, you know, a lot of people that work at Ford, and I know some families that work at Ford that are in that range, and they're doing a little better than getting by, and they might even be single family, you know, single income in it. So
right. Well, if you're a single parent, now if you're a single parent, one child, the numbers switch to about $42,000, but largely because of things like food. But here's a breakdown, though, Ed, for how they came up with that number. And WFL.org in that story, they've got a link to the calculator and the study and everything. You can check it out. But, you know, monthly housing, $731 for your rent or house payment. That's not exorbitant. That's not exaggerated. That's about average. Monthly food for a family of four, $754 a month. Remember, these are monthly totals. You know, that's about $150, $160 a week. You know, where you get into a lot of this, though, is you got to get into monthly child care, which gets expensive. They're adding a little bit over $900 for that, which is right. I mean, it costs you a couple hundred bucks a week to put two kids in daycare. So that number is pretty much on it. Monthly transportation, $600. You know, you're two parents, you're driving two cars, you're both working. That's not anything. That's $300 a month. That's about 50 bucks a week, you know, or a little bit over 50 bucks a week. So that's not bad. You know, and then, you know, your other necessities, $380. I'm assuming that's shampoo, stuff like that. Your taxes, $295. You know, so your monthly expenses are $5,000. And I think all of those numbers are pretty damn realistic just based on my own living right here in Louisville. I think those numbers are pretty much dead on. So, you know, we've got to, you know, we think about that and we look at that. And we've got to realize we do have some problems here that aren't being addressed. You know, and part of the reason they're not being addressed is because we've got idiots out there that run things that simply don't really care and are hypocritical. And I've got to bring this guy up as being one of them, Matt Bevin. Remember that name, folks. Matt Bevin has just announced, or is going to announce this week, that he is going to challenge Mitch McConnell in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. Now, for me, I'm not a McConnell fan. We've taken on and chastised Mitch McConnell many times on this show. I'm not a fan of any particular person just because they're in a party. I could care less about that. But Matt Bevin transplanted to Louisville. He's 46 years old. He moved up to Louisville sometime after he was 30. He was here in the late 90s. You know, he's lived and worked in Pennsylvania and Boston. But here's the thing. He's got a family business that he owns. It's called Bevin Brothers Manufacturing in East Hampton, Connecticut. This business makes bells. Yep, you heard me right. This business makes bells, you know, cowbells, whatever bells you want. He's the president of this company, of Bevin Brothers Manufacturing. So I really have to wonder how much time he's actually spending in Louisville. You know, and then, of course, he runs around with, you know, Democrat senators like Richard Blumenthal and everything else. Well, here's the problem with Matt Bevin for me, Ed, and I really want you to weigh in on this. Matt Bevin is being touted as a Tea Partier and has Tea Party support to take on Mitch McConnell. The problem is, I think Matt Bevin is no Tea Partier whatsoever. Matt Bevin doesn't believe in smaller government or any of the other things that the Tea Party is supposed to believe in, and I say that for this reason. Back in 2012, Matt Bevin's family business in Connecticut burned. They burned. And he took a $100,000 government grant to help rebuild the factory. Now, why did he have to take a $100,000 federal grant to help rebuild the factory? Because Matt Bevin didn't do his job and carry fire insurance on his business. If my house burned up because I didn't have fire insurance, do you think the government is going to come in here and give me money to rebuild it? No. So here's a guy who says he's Tea Party who took a handout.
If you didn't have enough insurance, you get what's called comped.
Right.
Which is, that could leave you short too. But in matters of insurance, you over insure when it comes to your business.
Of course. There's not a business out there, a legitimate business, that knows what the hell they're doing that doesn't insure
or like my business, you put in fire suppression so the bastards it won't burn.
Well, and that's the thing. And here we've got this guy, Matt Bevin. Remember that name? Wants to run as a Republican, who believes in a Democratic philosophy of giving him a bailout when he fails to do due diligence in his own business. Now, this is a family business that's been around since, forever. I mean, this thing has been around since, 1900, something like that? It's been around forever. So he's born and raised, brought up in this business. He's the president of this business in Connecticut, not Kentucky. If he's so tied to Kentucky because he transplanted here a few years ago, maybe he should move his business with him. But this guy takes taxpayer money to rebuild his business because he didn't decide to carry, he felt it would be easier not to carry fire insurance on his business. And he supposedly believes in limited government, free markets, and fiscal responsibility. Now, John Kemper at the United Kentucky Tea Party, he asked these questions. Why would this business owner take taxpayer money to rebuild his business if he supports all of these things? What happened to his business insurance coverage? And I think that is an absolutely perfect question to ask. And for Bevin to act like he's a Tea Party, or for some of these people in the Tea Party to actually hate Mitch McConnell so bad that they want to put a guy up there who is probably a liberal at heart, if he believes in all these government bailouts, that's nothing conservative about him. I've got problems with it, Ed. What about you? Because none of that makes sense to me.
I've met Matt a few times. We've had some glancing conversations. I mean, I think he's an intelligent guy. I'm going to give it that much. But as with anything, and I'm willing to hear a person out. I'm willing to hear anybody out. I just kind of wonder. Like you talk, and John Kemper. Hats off to him. I tell you what, John's a pistol. If you've ever met John.
Right.
John will let you know what he's thinking. No two ways about that. But
John Kemper doesn't hold any punches. I'm
interested in hearing him out. I mean, sometimes you get up there and you got the Tea Party behind you. You go with the Tea Party moniker or the Tea Party endorsement or whatever. You self-proclaim your Tea Party or whatever, and you do the Michelle Bachmann thing. Your family farm gets a boatload of money, where your husband gets government dollars to pray the gay away and stuff. So rhetoric means nothing. Titles mean nothing to me. I mean, I'm willing to hear the guy out. I'm going to hear anybody out. He may be a total washout as far as I'm concerned, but he may have a couple good ideas that I'd be interested in hearing. But one thing I can say is I'm glad somebody's primary in McConnell. Because I do think that, having come from the Libertarian Party and also having witnessed what happens when major parties don't primary, dialogue is good. Country's in trouble, so I'm willing to hear anything out. I'm willing, and I'm actually encouraged when I hear of any incumbent, be it primary or otherwise, being challenged, because I think politicians, they don't just have to answer for the heavy it's not just about the heavy marketing during the general. I think people need to stand up and defend their record, and they need to justify what they've done. They need to put forth their ideas. So,
I'm totally in agreement with that.
I would question Bevin. Like I say, he's coming on, and it's like, boom, I'm a Tea Party candidate. It's like, my initial reaction is, oh, really? Are you?
My initial reaction is
right
this.
But right now, you can color me skeptic, because you've got to prove it to me. And then, of course, you run into the whole issue of what is the Tea Party anymore. Sometimes I think it's a fractured group. There are some purists out there, like John Kemper. But then there's some groups out there that are Tea Party, and sometimes I'm not sure they fully appreciate, you know, right? You know, they're not really conservatives. They just, they pick somebody they hate. They
well, I think
moniker to them, and then off to the races they go.
Well, I'm in agreement with you there. I mean, I think ultimately the Tea Party of today isn't the Tea Party there was just a few years ago. You know, the Tea Party today, everybody wants to associate with themselves with something and act like they're something or can influence something. The Tea Party proved it can have influence. So then they got everybody under the bread. Oh, yeah, I did that. I'm a member of the Tea Party. Yeah, that was me, you know, without even comprehending what it's all about. But in the case of Bevin, I mean, I honestly and truly – you know, I don't want to hear this guy speak. I mean, you know, actions speak louder than words, you know, but to me, if he's going to sit out there and try to say anything about less government or toe the Tea Party line, he has already proven that that's a lie. So his words at that point are nothing more than empty rhetoric to me. I mean, I'm sorry. That may make me, you know, judgmental, I guess, but I don't see how anything can be said that could come out of his mouth that would be truth when he's already lived everything else, you know, that was a lie to the Tea Party values. That's what puzzles
yeah.
me.
Well, I'm not going to say he's lived everything else. I mean, he took some government money, and maybe that was, you know, don't know the reasoning behind it. I'm sure he's going to have to answer for that because I'm sure McConnell's people are not going to let that one go.
Oh, you could bet, yeah,
but,
you could bet on
you know,
that. But if he went out and ran as a Republican.
But I would say, you know, I'm interested in hearing, you know, when you talk Tea Party, when you talk, you know, Libertarian, when you talk Goldwater conservative, things like that, or Rand Paul conservatives, or for that matter, civil libertarians, which crosses over into the liberal camp. You know, definitely, I'm interested in hearing, you know, what anybody has to say about NDAA, about CISPA, about drone strikes, about mm-hmm. preemptive war, you know, about anything like that, because they're, you know, you're focusing on one incident where he took money, which is, like I say, going to come back to haunt him, so he's going to pay that price. But I'm interested in hearing what other positions he has, and
if he would identify as a well, again, if he would identify that he's running as a Republican against Mitch McConnell, forget the whole Tea Party moniker and the BS rhetoric that goes along with that, okay, I'm with you. I really am. You know, and if McConnell has to spend a small fortune winning the primary to win the primary and he has less money to go against Allison Lundgren and Grimes, I won't be happy about it, but okay. That's what you do when you run elections. You know, when you run for office, you know, for most, you know, a lot of us, you, me, and a couple others I can think of, we run for office for the right reasons. I have never ran for office and portrayed myself as something I'm not. And, you know, I've got a history of proving that. Listen to every radio show we've ever done, read any article that's ever been written, you know, any public thing I've done. I stay true to my values. This guy hasn't proven that he does, and that's my concern. Is this guy a plant just to ease even the waters for Allison Lundgren Grimes? I don't know. But I thought it was a story we needed to talk about. You know, we've got to get into this, Ed. We'll probably continue into this tomorrow night big time because I really had planned on spending a lot more time on it tonight than we have so far. Detroit, Detroit, Detroit. And I want to start with this. On October the 13th of 2012, remember, folks, right before the election against Mitt Romney, Obama made a public statement that just a few years ago, the auto industry wasn't just struggling, it was flatlining. GM and Chrysler were on the verge of collapse. More than a million jobs across the country were on the line. Not just auto jobs, jobs of teachers, small business owners, and everyone in communities that depend on this great American industry. He goes on to say that his administration refused to throw in the towel and do nothing. We refuse to let Detroit go bankrupt. We bet on American workers and American ingenuity, and 3 years later, that bet is paying off in a big way. Yep, Mr. President, 3 years later, that bet is paying off in a big way because Detroit wants to file bankruptcy. So this was all lies once again, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, let's face it. The bankruptcy was not handled properly, you know, the way it went down. But
how was it not handled properly?
No, it wasn't. The bondholders got screwed. Certain select stockholders were made whole. I mean, go figure. That's not the way bankruptcies go down because bonds hold a priority over stocks. So all the bondholders got, you know, it was they rammed it through to take care of certain select groups. Now, having said that, you know, the whole Detroit thing, I mean, to me, when a politician talks like that, that's just hubris. You know, it's my grandfather used to say, wish it in one hand, shit in the other, and see which one fills up the first. Well,
right.
They wish in one hand, you know, they're sitting there, and sure to God, anybody with even a modicum of finance understands that, you know, nobody's out of the woods yet. Nobody. And to sit there and say, we saved it, okay, that's hubris. I mean, he's up there saying, you know, we saved it.
It's but the like, masses dude, believed it.
You know, it's a 10-round fight, and you're only in the fourth round. Don't claim victory. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the whole Detroit thing, I mean, we'll bounce into it further. But to me, it's just poor, poor, poor planning. When you talk about the city of Detroit, it's been in decline for decades upon decades. And mm-hmm. the city fathers, the people that, unfortunately, it falls into the tough luck category, the people that the citizens of Detroit elected were corrupt, a lot of corruption. I mean, they've got a few high-ranking city officials, including the mayor, in prison right now. So they elected
yep.
corruption, they elected incompetence, and they just failed to adjust for demographic trends, for economic trends. And they just kept running this thing full tilt until it hit the wall.
And who's been in control in Detroit for more than 50 years?
You know you want to say it.
I do. The Democrats.
You do.
The Democrats. And when you look at, and here's the thing for me, when you look at every bankruptcy around the country, these cities that have been filing bankruptcy, you go all the way back to Birmingham, Alabama, Jefferson County. You go to California. You go to Detroit. Insert city here. Every one of these places have one thing in common. Every one of these cities have had Democratic leadership only for decades, not a couple of years, for decades. And what really startles me most about this Detroit thing right now, and we'll get into all the details tomorrow night, but what really startles me most about this is what Ingham County Circuit Court Judge Rosemarie Aquilina had to say. She accused the Michigan governor and state attorney general of not honoring the president.
Yeah.
She went on to criticize the Snyder administration. Governor Rick Snyder, he's the Michigan governor. Governor Rick Snyder is a Republican, but he just got elected and took office in January of 2011. So she's accusing him. She's on the attorney general's office. You know, and she goes on to say that this bankruptcy is not honoring the United States president who took Detroit's auto companies out of bankruptcy and then went even further to say that she was going to make sure that President Obama got a copy of her order because she knows he's watching this. Now, to my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is exactly why we have three branches of government, executive, judicial, and legislative. This judge overstepped her bounds, was not impartial or nonpartisan in any way, shape, or form, tried to throw these guys to Barack Obama, and nobody has called for her head. Nobody. That is alarming to me. How can a judge sit there and act like they're an impartial judge when they do things like that, Ed? That just puzzles the hell out of me.
Well, the Barack Obama quote was definitely out of line, and I'm sure she's paying a price for it. You know, and that one, I honestly don't understand. You know, I've been thinking, are you, you know, again, as we talk a lot, it's like, really? The, you know, cameras were on, the stenographers or whatever were going at it. So everybody heard what you were saying. You know, it's fine. Say that in private if that's how you feel. But, you know, the presidential worship, of course, me, I won't worship any politician. Not like
right.
that.
Right, I agree.
But, it's the whole worship thing. That was out of line. Now, oddly enough, I am going to agree with this kid on one point. And she did say that, you know, that the governor and the AG were trying to ram this thing through so that they could, you know, cut the employee pensions off at the knees, you know, get a stronger position for negotiation. I think she's right there because, I've had some customers go bankrupt on me and stuff. and you don't just show up and go, boom, we want bankruptcy. You know, you got to send notices out to all your creditors, which would be the employee union. So that comment was out of line, but I do think her actions, you know, from what limited legal knowledge I have, I think her actions in stalling it and putting the brakes on this thing until they can hash out, you know, a weighted payment settlement or something before they just go in and wipe the pensions out, pretty much,
well,
like down to 10%. That was the right thing to do for the working people.
Well, I mean, here's the reality, and we'll get into the rest of this tomorrow night because we really got to wrap up. We're almost out of time, but, you know, here's the reality. There was a bunch of things that went wrong in Detroit. Every one of these cities who have been filing bankruptcy have filed bankruptcy because of Democratic leadership. What's really fascinating to me is what the mainstream media refuses to talk about or cover, and we'll get into a lot of that tomorrow night. We're going to talk about the high tax rates and all the other stuff that's been going on for the last 50 years. I mean, you know, Detroit's last Republican mayor was in 1962. So, you know, you've got 51 years of a Democratic mayor there as well. So we're going to get into a lot of that tomorrow night, but it is fascinating, and we're going to put out all the reasons why when we get back to this tomorrow night. But one thing I want people to be really clear here on, the president is already talking about a bailout for Detroit. This judge actually said something along that line when she was talking out of her ass. So he's already talking about bailing out Detroit. If he bails out Detroit, there's a reason for it, because Chicago is right behind them, and we'll talk about that tomorrow night. Ed, final thoughts, man, final thoughts.
Well, you know, final thoughts. You know, one of the things that we always get into, we talk about the media, but we had talked on it off air about Detroit and long-term planning and stuff. And it's just, you know, politics, just like the media, is all based on, it's preying on your short attention spans. It's preying on your, you know, striking up feelings for the moment. And people need to, they need to find a way to distance themselves from that. Start looking at things empirically. Start looking at things and saying, okay, you know, this is what you're doing this year. This is what you're doing next year. What are you doing for 5 years? What's the 10-year plan? Oh, by the way, I have kids. So what's the 40-year plan? And that's what's sorely missing from the equation. That's what's sorely missing from the selling out of the technical training center downtown. You know, hey, fine, somebody somewhere got a quick payoff. Somebody probably going to sell some decent chunk of real estate in the east side and, you know, make some nice money. Maybe somebody got bribed, I don't know. But looking at the long term, you know, that's how I tend to look at long term. What's the long term ramifications of not having a training center downtown? I mean, where you know, look at where it could be if it were there. Look at it a year, two, five. Look at it 10 years, 20 years from now. If, you know, these young kids can pick up a skill maybe that they don't pick up in high school. And it begins to improve the area. 20 years, you know, that's the thing. But politicians, they don't get to take credit for what's going to happen 20 years from now. They, you know, they want the immediate credit. And then when they know, and I'm convinced in a lot of cases they're smart guys, and they know they're screwing something up that's going to, you know, this bill's coming due in 20 years. Now they're going to be long gone, and it should be somebody else's problem. So people need to start thinking long term and questioning their politicians' decisions and motives for the long term, you know, unless we all plan on dying anytime really, really soon.
Well said, my friend, well said. And for me, I mean, I continue coming back to the African-American community. This is not a situation where Louisville Politics and Ed Springsteen have sat here and just decided to talk about the African-American community because of some bullshit racism charge by a bunch of race haters and race baiters like Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and everything over Trayvon Martin. You can go through, you will see a history that we have continued to fight for the West End. We have continued to fight for the African-American community. The problem is, as it always has been, the black community leadership, the so-called reverends, sell out for their own gain. I'm sorry, folks. You got to call it the way it is. This isn't a white man's problem. The only people that can fix the black community is a black man. But when you've got one black man who has made himself prominent with a couple of white politicians who happen to be libtards that have destroyed our cities, as we can see from Detroit, Birmingham, and all these other places – we've got a disturbing problem here. This land deal is just one of several that I will be outing in the coming weeks. The stories are already written. They're going to be posted. So for you idiots who want to sit here and call us on the phone and act like a fool or want to follow me around and act like a fool, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Something happens to me, it continues. So I don't care. I really don't. Because the goal has always been to be inclusive and make my Louisville and our Louisville an inclusive place. Now, most white and black people alike do not fall for the bull crap racism rants that we're continuing being fed. But our media loves to throw that down our throats. The national media wants everybody to believe that the white man is making target practice of the black man, but even the statistics don't back that up. And then the local media wants everybody in the white culture who has the money to sit there and look at black man and think that every black man is a mob mentality because of racing into Walmart, destroying a store, and stealing stuff. It's a scam. Who benefits? For you guys in the black community who think I'm lying, look at where you are today. Look at where you were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, in your neighborhoods today. Has there been any improvement? No. Who's out there improving? You've got Kevin Cosby. St. Stephen's Church is a pretty big place these days. It's a nice church. I've been in it. It's a nice church. And when you talk to Kevin Cosby face to face, man, he can sell ice to an Eskimo. He's a black version of Jerry Abramson to me. But he just sold out the black community. He just took a potential opportunity to make it better for the black community and the African-American community and the West End in general. He took it away based on a deal with Greg Fisher that he profited from. We've got other examples. We've got Miller's Lane property. That's another story. That's part of the stories that will be coming out, where this city continues spending millions to buy a property that's worth thousands. We've got one property we spent $2.6 million buying, and it was assessed at $400,000. Immediately after the purchase, it was reassessed, and you know what? It still wasn't reassessed at $2 million. It's property we're still sitting on today because nobody will buy it. What insider profited from that? We're going to let you know. These are illegal dealings, folks. It's not only illegal to do the crap that they're doing with our finances, it's immoral to continue excluding a part of our Louisville population, and not just Louisville. This is the inner city problem all around the country. Detroit is the tip of the iceberg for what's coming. Wait till Chicago jumps on board. Detroit's going into bankruptcy because they got a $3.5 billion shortfall on their pensions. Kentucky has $30 billion, or number one in the country, for pension shortages and underfunded pensions. We're going to get there? We're not there yet, but we're going to be. But you know who's next? Chicago. Chicago's bond rating just got downgraded once again. Why? Because everybody wants to ignore the inner cities. The Democrats, the race haters, the race baiters are making their money, but the people they purport to represent are losing ground more and more every day. I, for one, am sick of it, and we're going to do something about it. That's why we went down this road. Call me a racist, call me what you will, but I have no white guilt. And I want my black brothers and sisters to succeed in this world. And they're not going to get there when they're continually being sold a bill of goods by Democratic libtards and failed black leadership who only represent themselves and not the community. That's it for tonight, folks. Tomorrow night, me and Ed will be back here at 7 o'clock. We're going to get into more of the Detroit problems because I really want to talk about everything and all the failures that Detroit had. And we'll talk about that tomorrow night. And I guess we'll see you then at 7. Mr. Martin, thank you so much for your time. We'll see you then.
All right, sir.
All right, sir. Take care. For the rest of you guys, have a great night. We'll talk to you soon.